Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
Welcome back to the Managing Uncertainty podcast. This is Brian Strauser, Principal and CEO at BrightPath. And with me today is the one and only Bray Wheeler.
Good morning.
This is our Brightcast episode for the week of July 22nd. We did not have episodes last week due to some travel and poor planning on our part, but we're back now. We're back in our usual rhythm of two episodes a week. The Brightcast focused on current events and what they mean for your business and a deeper dive episode, which will come out later this week. So we're going to start by talking about an article that was in Axios's newsletter on July 19th in an article by Kaveth Waddell and Jennifer Kingson about the coming deep fake threat to business. And I'm just going to read the opening paragraph and then tie this back to something I heard last week at a conference that I was at. So from the article, in the first signs of a mounting threat, criminals are starting to use deep fakes, starting with artificial intelligence generated audio, to impersonate CEOs and steal millions of dollars from companies which are largely unprepared to combat them. Why does this matter? Nightmare scenarios abound. As deepfakes grow more sophisticated, a convincing forgery could send a company's stock plummeting or soaring, extract money, or ruin its reputation in a viral instance. For example, imagine a convincing fake video or audio clip of Tesla CEO Elon Musk disclosing a massive defect the day before a big Tesla launch. The company's share price would crumble. For all the talk about deepfake videos, it's deepfake audio that has emerged as the first real threat to the private sector. The article goes on to describe an incident that Symantec identified. And last week, I was at the Aspen Security Forum at the Aspen Institute in Aspen, Colorado. And one of Symantec's lead security architects described this scenario that's highlighted in the article that they have seen three successful deepfake audio attacks on businesses, and not small businesses, big business. In each of these, a company's CEO called a senior financial officer to request an urgent money transfer, except it wasn't the CEO. It was deepfake audio generated by sampling the CEO's voice from earnings calls, investor presentations, interviews on the news.
Even TED Talks, they were saying too, right?
TED Talks, that's
YouTube
right.
YouTube videos.
Yes.
Anything.
And you think about the number of times that a Fortune 500 CEO is on audio or video somewhere where that video could be extracted and then reassembled using AI and machine learning. This was a part of a cybersecurity panel at the Aspen Security Forum last week, and it was scary.
Well, it's almost one of those things where the bigger company you are, the more at risk you are for that, because you're remote, you're using all sorts of technology to be able to conduct business that
right.
You know, smaller businesses are, hey, we're sitting across from each other,
right?
We can do that in person, whereas over the phone, voicemails, all sorts of stuff.
And think about how much more advanced this is from, you know, what we saw before as the kind of spear phishing type of attempts to do money transfers. I mean, when I was interim chief security officer for a Fortune 500 company back in 2017, we had an outside email that looked like it was from our CEO, but it was not from the CEO, that was sent to the controller to make a wire transfer. And fortunately, said controller was a very smart lady who looked at that and said, he's never asked me to do this before. This seems weird, and called me. And I got the CISO involved, and we very quickly identified that email was fake. It was coming from an outside email address disguised to look like the CEO. So not overly difficult to detect. This sounds almost impossible to detect that this is fake.
Well, yeah, especially if the topics that they're talking about in these interviews too, it probably doesn't take much for the AI and the software to be able to piece some of the stuff together and make it sound legit.
Make it sound legit. So the challenge for businesses is this needs to be, I think, immediately become part of the education around social engineering and fraudulent attempts, particularly with folks that have wire transfer authorization, ACH transfer authority within a company in the finance or accounting areas. This needs to be part of some immediate awareness communication.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it's almost one of those things you have to almost go back to kind of some rudimentary, you know, even security precautions where it's, you know, you're saying, hey, here's the word of the day, you know, or none of this is done over the phone. It's all done in person. If you get any of this stuff, you know, over the phone, over email. You know, any of that kind of stuff, that it's not legit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, your wire transfer, your controls around financial transfers and remittance payments need to be such that a simple phone call or email does not authorize such a payment of any type, of any amount. It needs to be, you know, through a controlled process that's internal to the company. Those are things I would look at, and have a central place, like we always talk about, have a central place for companies to report, or your employees rather, to report this kind of behavior when it comes up, even if it's, they just want a place to like check out if this is legit or not.
Yep. Oh yeah. Cause it's the better safe than sorry, for sure. You're almost better taking the time to say, nope, that's legit. You know, that actually is coming from us versus the one that gets through.
Totally.
And I think even too, the example they give of, you know, having Elon Musk report something out, you know, even the reputational problems. So kind of the financial piece aside, you know, even having a process and revisiting some of the way that we make announcements, the way that messages come through, you know, that it is firm. You do have a standard process, that it's not kind of case by case basis as you're making these different announcements, that it has to be within a process, because that'll help you manage your reputation. Mm-hmm. It'll let it not escalate into something that's different. It'll let you double check yourself, so to speak, as a company.
Mm-hmm. What's next? It's our next challenge.
So what's next? Strait of Hormuz. Some more stuff happening in the Gulf. So we've talked about Iran a little bit in the past, what related to their own strikes and things like that. What's kind of happened over the last couple of weeks, and the last week in particular, late last week, Iran has been a little bit more active in the Straits. They ended up capturing a British oil tanker. It was flagged UK, has a diverse kind of multinational crew aboard it. But Iran said it was conducting itself in ways that violated international maritime law. It was seized. UK, US, other countries have said it was in the kind of Oman's international waters. Iran says it was in Iranian national waters. Mm-hmm. So, needless to say, Iran has kind of confiscated that vessel, taken the crew, kind of seized them. They're showing them photographs and videos of them still on the boat. But the big case here is it's escalated tensions, and it's kind of made the issue more complex, because the US and UK aren't necessarily aligned in applying pressure to Iran for the kind of the nuclear aspect of the situation. This is more international trade route. So there's a little bit of who's helping who, and when are we going to help each other, and who's going to get involved. So it's made it a little bit more complicated, but there's reports of, you know, 6 to 10 more kind of oil tankers, British UK flagged oil tankers, still stuck in the Strait of Hormuz. They can't move them. You know, it's really kind of unsettled the Strait over there over the weekend here.
There's a number of foreign policy issues, I think, that this raises that play into how companies should be processing this. Again, as I mentioned in the last segment, I was at the Aspen Security Forum last week, and this action, along with the challenges, foreign policy challenges with Iran, pretty hot topic of conversation, to say the least.
Yeah, I bet.
I think the consensus on Iran's strategy right now is that they're attempting, given President Trump's challenges with maintaining and building alliances, they're attempting to split the United States from other countries by forcing them down different paths of action. I'm not sure that strategy will be successful. The Brits and the U.S. have typically supported each other down the line in foreign policy and militarily when it comes to things like this. But the ball's right now is really in the U.K.'s court on how they want to proceed. They've been clear they want their tanker returned. But there's probably less pressure internally at the UK because the crew are not British. No one on the crew is a British citizen. Mm-hmm. So there's some tough choices ahead for the UK. I did note that the US took a number of actions last week. They put armed aircraft overhead of US commercial vessels that were moving through the Strait of Hormuz in order to defend them, but there were no attempts to interfere over the weekend. We're also apparently deploying up to 10,000 Air Force, Navy, Army to Saudi at the invitation of the Saudi king. That gives us a significant increase in air coverage and maritime surveillance capability. And we're moving a carrier from outside of the Persian Gulf into the Persian Gulf. And of course, that's 0.75 square miles of sovereign U.S. territory with a propeller and an air wing, a big air wing.
Big air wing.
So there's a lot of capability. I think we're moving there to have more options. The challenge for businesses, I think, is what we've been talking about, which is this is the current kind of conflict hotspot. So if you operate in the Gulf, you're dependent upon Gulf shipping, or you have travelers or others in the UAE, Saudi, Kuwait, Qatar, you know, countries that are U.S. allies that are safe to operate in, there's a higher potential military conflict in the area than before. All that said, I don't think Iran is looking for a war. This is a power play.
Yeah. This is them kind of exerting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it, you know, everybody kind of defaults to, and obviously so kind of the oil prices, oil stockpiles, things like that. So if your companies are dependent on the oil that's coming out of that area, that's certainly something to consider and kind of have some more conversation about, because this will likely kind of tit for tat,
mm-hmm.
kind of seizing of different tankers and disrupting and all this kind of stuff. It hasn't gone away in a couple months, mm-hmm. you know, that this is probably going to continue. Now, mm-hmm. if you're reliant on probably more US-based or, you know, South American or something like that, then you're in a little bit better shape. But yeah, this is definitely an Iranian kind of power play
mm-hmm.
on a bunch of different fronts in terms of different policies and topics. So
yeah, it'll be interesting to see where this progresses given the next topic we're going to talk about, because I think the British course of action will depend upon what starts to happen beginning tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And that is when Queen Elizabeth will invite the winner of the Conservative Party's leadership election, former Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson, to be the next prime minister and to form a new government in her name. And she will have that audience tomorrow morning, London time, with Boris. Boris was the winner of the Conservative Party's leadership election, which was conducted via mail over the last 3 weeks, I believe it was.
Yep.
He and the finalist, who I don't recall who that was. Johnson will have about 90 days to figure out an acceptable Brexit plan and get that plan through Parliament, or the EU is just going to throw the UK out, is my understanding of
yep.
the table stakes here right now.
And I think that is a good possibility the EU is not going to renegotiate because of Boris Johnson's positions on the issues and what he's been the champion of this whole plan, that, you know, if he takes any kind of a hard line or, you know, can't negotiate, the EU is just, mm-hmm. they're done. I think if somebody else was in this office, there may be more of a conversation. There probably won't be right now.
Johnson, for those of you that don't follow UK politics, is a populist. He's definitely more along the lines of President Trump's style in terms of action and, you know, perhaps lack of organization at times as he goes through that. This is going to definitely change the UK cabinet. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, the number two official in the cabinet, has said he will resign. And I imagine there'll be other, I mean, he'll get to pick a new cabinet if he chooses to do so. Clearly, the Chancellor has said he's not staying on.
Yep.
So we're going to see some pretty major ministerial changes. But there's really two immediate crises facing Johnson as PM tomorrow morning. And that is, how does he figure out the Brexit strategy that Parliament will accept? And second, what does he do about the tanker, the British tanker being held by the Iranian Republican Guard?
Yep. Well, and that's, not to bring it completely back to the tanker, but, you know, there's a lot of conversation that's come up that, you know, UK is facing a lot of different tankers and things like that, reflagging themselves off the UK flag in the Strait and going to other countries. And that, I mean, that has an impact. in a lot of different ways for the UK.
It's interesting because the strategy in the 80s was the opposite. It mm-hmm. was that companies wanted to flag their tankers with members of NATO because the US made a huge deal out of reflagging several tankers to the US flag so the US Navy would have more obligation to protect them, and that would make it less likely Iran or Iraq or others would attempt to screw around with those tankers. Now yep. we're going the other direction.
Now we're trying to mask ourselves with other countries that don't, that aren't involved
mm-hmm.
in some of these seizures of, you know, illegal oil, Iranian oil, or they say illegal Iranian oil. And I think, you know, even long-term, and one of the pieces that the New York Times called out too is, you know, that part of this Brexit plan, especially with the EU, is that Ireland issue and kind of being a populist. Yeah,
the Northern Ireland and Irish border.
He's not a huge fan of keeping goods free flowing up there. And that's really been one of kind of the major pillars of peace in that area. Mm-hmm. And that's The relatively open border. That, and
if it's a hard border crossing, it's going to cause problems.
It will
up there
most likely revert back. And that's been part of the conversation throughout this Brexit, but he definitely has a more hard line mm-hmm. on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that border is important.
So for companies, if you operate in the UK or Northern Ireland or Ireland, the Free State of Ireland, or the EU for that matter, now's the time to start watching what happens. The next 60 to 90 days are going to be critical for the Brexit strategy. They could leave, if they don't figure it out, then they leave with no treaty, no agreement, hard borders. That's going to be a real challenge for folks that for 30 some years have been used to free movement within the European community, and that's going to stop. And a portion of that was going to stop anyway, but they were trying to soften the impact of that change. But and certainly from a trade standpoint, it's just going to be a mess
yep.
If they don't figure that out. There's a lot to figure out.
Yep.
So that's it for this edition of the Managing Uncertainty podcast, Brightcast edition for the week of July 22nd. We'll catch you later in the week with our next episode. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe through your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.